Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington, D.C. insiders, policymakers, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and who are trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. When it comes to AI, consumer trust is on everyone's mind. And my guest today may just have the answer. Streetkar Fadaraj is a young visionary at the intersection of AI and privacy. As the founder of Eternus, he's redefining digital identity. Join us as we dive into his mission to create AI that serves humanity without compromising privacy or autonomy. Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tammy.
You know, we live here in Washington, and we're always focused on policy. And one of the big issues, honestly, has been, how do you validate identity? How do you know what's real or not real? And I was so excited when I heard about what you're doing, because it sounds like that's your focus. So can you tell us about it?
Yeah, sure thing. So primarily, we're a research lab building products and tools that tackle aspects of privacy, as well as identity, and at the end of the day, trust over the internet. One of the big issues right now, obviously, is that deepfakes are everywhere, and it's unclear what is real and what's not. But there's another kind of thing too, which is, even if something were real, how do you know it's true or not? I think these are two different problems. And ultimately, what the internet currently provides is a way for you to know where data came from when your browser talks to a server. This is different when you see content on a social media platform. You don't really know where it's coming from. And I think at the end of the day, if you have trillions of agents interacting on behalf of humans, what you want to know is where data came from. Once you know that, it should be up to you or whatever application you're interfacing with to decide whether you choose to believe it or not. I can go into this a bit more.
Yes, please do. Walk us through agents, or how you see how agents will be used in the future, because they're not really being used in terms of general public right now.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the simplest form of an input-output agent right now is, let's say, ChatGPT. I wouldn't say it's agentic in the form you would expect, because it's sort of like a quick response to something you'd ask. But a real agent would perform a complex task over multiple minutes, hours, or even days, and then get you an answer or response. We're not there yet. AI that can do long-form tasks, I think it will take another year or two, but we're not too far off. The world I'd like to see is every human has an agent that is sort of the top-level agent. And you can give whatever arbitrary task you want to this agent, and it goes and performs it to the best of its ability. This can be pretty broad. So, you know, we've gotten pretty used to how we interact with apps, for example. Each app is in some sense a software agent with some interaction on your end that does one very specific thing. But if you've seen the movie Her from, say, 10 years ago now, if you remember, Samantha from Her is able to do whatever the main character wants. And I think we're getting pretty close to that world. Obviously, this gives rise to questions around privacy, what it means for your agent to do stuff on your behalf over the internet and in the real world, and what identity means in this world if most actions are being executed by things that are not human.
So you're saying that an agent would book me a flight to Paris and book me a great restaurant and get me a hotel, right? And so the agent would do that in theory, or maybe in practice by now. We're talking about trust. So that means the agent would have your credit card information, would have everything about your identity, would know about your family and your likes. And so you're working on creating trust, or what kind of algorithm are you thinking about that would help you with that?
Maybe I can draw an analogy from the start of the internet and browsers. When the internet became popular, say 20 years ago or more, people were interacting with it and potentially didn't know whether they could trust the information they were seeing or receiving malicious information. And so the internet collectively had to upgrade to a protocol called TLS. This protocol is what your browser actually uses to interact with servers. This could be Google, it could be Amazon, it could be anything you go on the internet for. And this is actually running in the background every time you access a website already. you just don't see it. At the end of the day, the reason why you're able to trust the information that's coming to you is because this protocol is running, but this trust is now implicit in your day-to-day existence. You don't question every single day whether the information that's coming from google.com on your browser is actually Google sending you information. Similarly, I think that there will be a host of new protocols that need to emerge. I'll give you one example. There are many agent companies coming up now that are trying to automate tasks for humans. Let's say, to your example, you want to order $100 worth of food on DoorDash. Find me the things I like. Now your agent is getting on DoorDash and does this. We actually did this and DoorDash just logged us out. Obviously, there's other reasons for this, but it's because agents are bots and there is an inbuilt bot protection mechanism on most consumer websites and most websites on the internet in general. The issue with this is that there's no distinction between good bots and bad bots. So in order for you to know what's a good bot or bad bot, the end server, in this case, DoorDash or Amazon, whatever is serving you information, needs to recognize that it's a bot that's taking good actions on your behalf and allow them in instead of serving, you know, dozens of captchas or ways to log you out because they think that you're being hacked. And this is one protocol that we'd like to push. The second is if you want to prove anything about yourself across any website that you have loaded on your side, you should be able to. I'll give you an example. If you want to prove to Uber Eats that you've spent more than $1,000 on DoorDash, you should be able to do that without getting DoorDash's approval. This is your data and it belongs to you. And it may be of some minor significance now, but when agents are acting on your behalf, they'll need to be able to prove things about you constantly to external services. The world of applications gets so much richer when you can have arbitrary things being done on your behalf. And in this world, proofs become extremely important. So what we've built is a simple notary network system, which runs your browser traffic through what's called a trusted execution environment. And we'd like to welcome others to join us as well. But this is sort of the evolution of the internet as we see it. Eventually, the protocols that underlie internet traffic themselves might change, and that will allow, let's say, what we call the verified internet. But we're not there yet. And I think the challenge with a lot of trust, security, and cryptography products is that it requires buy-in. It's not something that you produce and suddenly gets adoption. What you need is, for example, these servers to accept this protocol and serve it to users who also accept this protocol. And that is currently where we're at. We've designed several of these protocols and we're excited to start working with AI labs.
So then how do you do that? You go to X amount of AI labs. And what is it? Is this an app? Is it like Chrome? Is it a browser? What is it?
It will have to be a conversation if we want to get actual adoption. And Ultimately, this is about evolving the internet and also evolving the human experience. We're going to need AI labs to work with us to upgrade how they're thinking about agents. But this also requires collaboration with standard bodies. The internet is, let's say, a collection of standards that a lot of different people have agreed to run independently. And there are bodies like the IETF that have designed a lot of the things that have gone on to become the internet or reached consensus on, hey, this is how we should all think of the internet. I think ultimately, in order for a verified internet to emerge, you need to interact with these bodies. So where we are is we've built some front-end interfaces that demonstrate the usefulness of our tools, and we're moving on to further research problems. For example, let's say you're a website and you have a robots.txt file, which most websites do these days. This is basically a file that says, hey, robots or bots should pay attention to things that we allow and don't allow. How do you force this behavior? Right now, it's not forcible. You could create a bot that just ignores all of the robots.txt. So that's just one example of many of how having intelligent agents on the internet will require new protocols. And that's what we're working on.
And have you talked to any of the labs? What are you hearing from any of these folks?
The reality is that this is not necessarily top of mind for them. I think the AI labs are in a race to build AGI, and even safety conscious labs like Anthropic have changed their rhetoric more recently to effectively building AGI. I do think that it will be net positive for humanity. Having said this, it creates an enormous host of issues, which I think they need to work with labs like ours to address. we started speaking with various team members at these labs in very early conversations. I think that once we open source a lot of our work and start working with standards bodies, there might be a more official push to integrating it with their products.
Answering the big question among policymakers is, how can we in real time add safety measures and authenticate? Really, you're talking about authenticating digital data. How do you know what's real and not real? And what you're saying is you have to do it at the very basic level, because everyone else is saying it's already out there, it's already done. But it sounds like you're coming in on the side and saying you can embrace this, and then people would know what's real and what isn't, and what to trust and not.
There's multiple efforts. I'll give one example. There's an effort called C2PA, which Adobe, Microsoft, and a few other parties are pushing. This allows an integration of metadata into images. And so now you know what the provenance of an image is, and you can also see if an image has been, let's say, edited in a certain way. But this standard would require buy-in from every single layer. You would need the people who produce images to integrate this. You would also need Photoshop to integrate this. You would need your phone when it displays something to integrate this, so that in the background, if you ever want to see that there's a manifest that says, yes, this was taken by a very specific device, or this has not been tampered with, or the root of trust for this being real is this other entity, and you can go check that entity's authenticity. I think that standards like this are useful, but it requires a ton of buying from various parties. What we're proposing for starters is tools that people can run themselves that are actually immediately useful. I'll give an example. Plaid is a company that effectively acts as a notary of your bank information and pipes it to services that require it in order to provide things to you. So for example, a brokerage might want to check your bank balance and connect with Plaid. Your bank would then share information with Plaid, which then goes to the brokerage. What we're suggesting is that you could do this with any piece of data that you see. So for example, let's say you're on a dating app and you've told your AI agent, hey, find me some dates on Thursday. Now your AI agent could interact with other people's AI agents and share verified information about you. So verified information might be, yes, I got a blood test from Mount Sinai, I have no genetic diseases. And information that's effectively been attested by Mount Sinai. These can be shared with services or other agents, and coordination becomes useful and easy this way. So that's an example of what we've done already. Now it's about getting adoption.
That's incredible. And are you going to any industry first? You mentioned medical or finance. Is there a place where you think is a better entry point? Or all of them really is what you're talking about?
Great question. The reality is that the entry point for TLS, let's say as a protocol, was to convince people to adopt it at scale across all of the internet. And that ultimately was the most effective thing to do. Having said this, it's become a bit more of a subjective issue. On a practical front, financial and healthcare information is typically the most valued information that you would want verified information for. So that's something we've been thinking a lot about, applications related to this. But really what we'd love is for a standard to emerge where we collaborate and AI labs adopt it at scale.
And to get that, that's individual conversations. There's no government involved in this. I mean, you don't go to the Commerce Department and talk to NIST or any of those folks that are working on the government's behalf or governments, right? You hope that the entire world covers this. Isn't this a little bit what's happening with WorldCoin or the plan with WorldCoin?
I think WorldCoin's a good example of a type of effort that I do see as broadly positive. So every government has a large digital ID program, almost every government. And this includes governments that you might not think are very tech forward. India is a great example of a government that's rolled this out at scale. So they've provided a digital ID called Aadhaar. So now people can use their Aadhaar ID to do a huge range of things. And they've rolled this out to, you know, 1.4 billion people. It's no small thing. And every government has this form of digital ID. I do think WorldCoin is interesting. The ultimate goal really is that any action that's digital in nature has a human root of trust. So you know that a human originated this action, and if the action is malicious, then you can trace it back to the human, and you can either change their social credit score, let's say, if we want to be dystopic, or just have some enforcement if there were illegal activities being conducted. So I think this is broadly positive. There's only 8 billion people. So it seems like a tractable problem to go, okay, 8 billion people should all have access to an interoperable identity system that can be used to delegate keys to AI agents. What I mean by this is when you have agents doing things on your behalf as a human, you would like to delegate access. So even if later the agent does something, at least the service knows it's on behalf of some human. Now, what WorldCoin specifically is doing, the pros and cons are the following. They've signed up about 14 million people so far. There's 8 billion people on Earth. So I think that obviously things need to start somewhere, but at the rate at which we're going, we'll probably get AGI much before this identity system reaches full adoption. The second thing is, I do think tying it to a currency that is not uniformly distributed, this brings into question, okay, like, is this the currency you want adopted at scale? I do think it's a very relevant experiment, but it's a question people should be asking. And then finally, it is a bit subversive. Every government already has a digital ID program, and ultimately they want to control it. And if you have something like WorldCoin doing this in different countries, it can be seen as subversive. And I do think this is something WorldCoin is trying to address. But all in all, I think it's a very positive thing for humanity. If we don't get this unified identity system, a few things become extremely difficult, which is distribution of resources at scale. I think we might have AGI 5 to 10 year period, maybe sooner. At that point, the question of labor and economic production gets completely decoupled. I may be saying things, I may be relatively useful now to do things that matter, but maybe in 5 to 10 years, I won't be. And that's something that applies fairly uniformly to the entire world. This seems kind of unimaginable to most people now, but I don't think it's too far. So in that world, you want to be able to constantly distribute resources at scale. I think WorldCoin is definitely pushing on that. We have an experiment on our end too, which is using biometric identity to then delegate keys to agents and allow for cheap resource distribution. So we've built that out internally as well. And
wait, hold on. You have to explain what that is. You have to explain that a little more.
Sure. There's 3 pieces, let's say. One is the biometric onboarding system, where you can guarantee that someone with a certain identity is backed by a real human, one-to-one. That's what WorldCoin's built. The second piece is a representation of this in a public manner. So they have public keys. In Ethereum, you have a public key. A public key would allow people to send data, or in this case, money. So that's piece 2. And then the piece 3 is what identity means and delegation of identity. So we have built a way to aggregate, let's say, 1 million different signatures into one compact form so that you could prove that you live in DC, or you voted a certain way, or you are a certain gender or a certain age, and so on. But let's say you have 1 million of these credentials. You could prove all of that without revealing anything in a private way. That's one piece. And the second is you can give an AI agent access to some of this information in a way that's strictly dependent on your preferences. So I think these are the 3 pieces. Look, I think all 3 pieces should be fully open. Ultimately, the end state should be that humans own their own identity. Humans are able to give delegated access to AI agents. And you should be able to do this flexibly in a way that is corresponding to your preferences.
Okay. I'm not on the business side, but isn't this something that you could sell to Colorado and other progressive states who are already spending so much time on AI? Because people want to trust the AI, right? They want to be helped, but they need to trust it. Would you consider going to states and say, hey, let's do this pilot program?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to work with governments. I think that's the highest source of leverage, but also distribution. And state governments, national governments, I think that ultimately, if this doesn't get adopted by billions of people, it doesn't serve its purpose.
We're talking about the whole world. And I'm just thinking, mm-hmm. as a media person, you need a great case study and a lot of what I would call third-party validators, people whose lives have been changed and they feel better about it. Because the biggest fear I've found at doing this Washington AI network for the last year and a half is that people are deathly afraid. They're either totally for and excited, but don't really know what to do, or the few that know what to do or what's ahead, the agents and everything you've talked about. The other people are worried about, I'm going to lose my identity. So you're taking a primary issue, a primary challenge, and saying, hey, folks, this is a potential solution.
I do think that much like OpenAI started doing research and then evolve into a product, I think that we are similar. We'll eventually need to have things that people adopt. Having said this, we might not have the time OpenAI had given the timelines of AGI.
I don't think you have the timeline. I think that's the other issue. The other thing is, again, giving you more business advice, even though I don't know anything. What about NYU, your alma mater? I mean, this would help universities. It would save time, right? Allow students, administrators, everyone to be able to move faster. And then when you think about the fact that if you have, do you guys call it a notary system where, you know, or a verified system, that you could do bigger things because you're not delayed by this?
Yes. So much of it just depends on adoption. So I would agree. I think almost everyone can benefit from things that allow you to have sovereign data, sovereign identity, sovereign AI. And maybe this goes into, you mentioned Washington and the challenge with policy. There's a couple different things at stake, right? One is about national security. I believe that people in DC want to make sure models are closed source, especially the most powerful ones. And this is because there's an implicit sort of race with other countries because they're also developing powerful AI. Now, obviously, US would like to get there first, and I think that makes sense. Having said this, if models are always closed source, it means that people, like the general population, might not benefit from AI progress as much. And I think this could be a little troubling, especially if we think, okay, we get to AGI, but then people are still anchored to this world where people work, but even the notion of work sort of disappears when you consider our individual labor being completely decoupled from economic productivity. Why wouldn't you have a bot that is super intelligent doing all economic tasks? I think you would. And in that world, again, you kind of don't want people to feel disenfranchised, right? So either you need to distribute resources effectively at scale, or you give everyone access to very powerful AI. And so this is the challenge I believe policymakers have to deal with, which is closed source AI is good, so you can keep tabs on, let's say, the safety of these models to some degree, but also not give away what might be considered national security secrets to other governments. But on the other hand, the individual sort of suffers in the long run because at least social mobility was possible before, because you could get educated, you could then have output, and you could rise the ranks of wealth class. But the moment you have something like AGI, social mobility actually gets completely squashed. No matter how intelligent anyone is, the work they do will have no bearing on their wealth class. I think this is the most troubling thing for me. You need to thread a needle here. You need to walk a very fine path between right and wrong, where I think the end state is that you need open source models that are very powerful, that are also safe. You need human root of trust for any action on the internet, so any bad action can be traced back. But you also need then provable systems, verifiable systems, systems that you can trust not just at the software data layer, but I'm talking at the hardware layer. And I think this last part is where a lot of new research focus should go into, given it seems very clear that over, let's say, a decade, we will get to AGI.
Sridhar, you need to come to DC. I have a lot of people that you could educate on these issues. Honestly, we haven't seen people talking about it at this molecular level, I would say. You talked about AGI, and you think that's 5 to 10 years away. During the UN General Assembly week in September, Sam Altman came out and said, superintelligence is probably coming in about 1,000 days. Do you have a prediction for superintelligence?
Yeah, look, I think he would have more visibility than most. I will say that all my skeptical friends who thought it might not happen during our lifetimes over the past 3 years have changed their tune. I've been thinking that AGI will be here before 2030. But again, these are all estimates that have heavy dependence on how fast AI labs go. If it was just one AI lab doing things, we might have gotten there much later. But the competitive pressures between now xAI2 and OpenAI and Anthropic and all the other smaller labs and the research coming out of DeepMind, I think the game theory just doesn't work out the way of AGI coming much further than 10 years away.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to ask you about the companies themselves. Do you look at them and you say, I think Anthropic's going to win the prize or OpenAI? I mean, you know, I come from the media world. We're always, wait, are we ahead of ABC? Are we behind NBC? Do you look at the other companies like that because you're competing on the front lines with them?
Yeah, I would say we actually want to collaborate with every AI lab, primarily because we are not on the AI capability side. We're on the verifiability of data, identity, new protocol side. And as a result, we'd like to work with all of them. I think even the notion of competition might not make sense once you get AGI, right? Which is why VCs are subsidizing these companies so heavily, even though the revenue models don't make sense yet. Because ultimately, once you get super intelligence or even human level intelligence, presumably you have the GDP of an entire nation in a data center. And if that's the case, then really any investment is justifiable. So I don't have a say on which AI lab is going to, you know, quote, win. I think all of them have extremely sharp people, some of whom I've met and spoken with even when they were at other AI labs. And I think this is a trend, which is the AI labs are hiring from each other / shuttling people around. There's a lot of competition to get the best talent. I do think that we may see a slowing down of the scaling laws, right? Where you need exponentially more investment in capital to get marginal returns in, let's say, intelligence or in the loss function that you're trying to reduce. Even if the scaling laws slow down, I think there is a host of algorithmic improvements. Plus, there are things like inference time compute that everyone is talking about now that will get us to at least human level intelligence, in my opinion.
Tell us just a little bit more about that.
Sure. So much of the improvement so far comes from, it's called pre-training the model, but in very simple terms, it seems, and Noam Brown from OpenAI has done a great job at giving several lectures around this. Basically, once you get a model to think more and to backtrack and question what it's already said, which you can classify, let's say, as inference time compute, which is compute applied at inference time as opposed to before inference was done in the training steps. So inference time compute alone has given us more improvements on benchmarks, and that's what O1 preview seems to have done. And now there's more and more effort being put into inference time compute, leading to performance improvements for models.
Before I let you go, let's turn back to Eternus. Tell us about your staff. Where did you find them? How many of you are there? Are you all in New York? We keep hearing about the competition for AI researchers.
I think that safety-focused researchers who would like to think about safety from more than just the AI capabilities angle should consider working with us or joining us, especially if they're interested in security and cryptography. We are a relatively distributed team, but between SF and New York, primarily. We are small, but we've already created tools that we think are very useful. And I do think we have a unique perspective on the types of things that would help a future where agents are doing everything on the internet. I do think we are looking at things that AI labs are not considering right now. And as anyone looking to do exciting work, you kind of want to be on the forefront where you want to work on things that might be relevant in a year or two from now, as opposed to right now. Otherwise, you'd just be building a product that people want to use. And I think that's where we're at. So if you want to work on exciting things, I'd say definitely join us. I do think that we care a lot about the future of humanity and we want to do things that are meaningful. One thing I tell people I speak to now is this might be the last job you ever do before AGI. So looking back, what I don't want to do is regret spending time a specific way. And I want to work on things that are important. Our team is mathematicians, cryptographers, and people who believe in this end state of humans being the root of trust of any action on the internet. That's what we care about. And making sure the internet is robust and verifiable. So by the end, when we get AGI, we can trust the world around us, but also have the tools necessary to preserve human agency. I think that is central to our mission. We have multiple people supporting us, including, say, Matt Green, who was instrumental in designing Zcash, and Daniel Kang, who worked on AI-related security and pointing out how LLMs could hack websites, and other really strong ZK researchers, people who've built companies.
Well, it sounds like a great group. Sridhar, I'm so glad to meet you. I'm so excited to see this work. I think it's the exciting thing we've all been waiting for in AI, and I hope to meet you someday. Please come to Washington.
Will do. Yeah. Next time I'm there, I'll let you know.
Excellent. Thank you, Sridhar Varadaraj, for being with us. We wish you all the best from the Washington AI Network.
Thanks, Tammy.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.